Good morning. I'm Marty Derlin with the KVNF News for Wednesday, August 7th, 2013. For many workers left jobless or unemployed after the recent economic recession, the domestic oil and gas boom now sweeping the United States seems like a quick ticket to high-paying work. For the latest edition of Sounds of the High Country, KDNK's collaboration with High Country News, Nelson Harvey spoke with Sandy Gebhartz, an Idaho woman who found work driving an oil truck in North Dakota's Bakken oil fields. He also talked to Sierra Crane Murdoch, who profiles Gebhartz in the current issue of the magazine. And as he found out, in a high-risk industry like the oil business, things don't always go exactly as planned.
She had a commercial driver's license, so she decided to go haul oil in the Bakken oil fields in North Dakota.
I drove an oil truck and hauled crude oil for various companies during my time back there. The business that I'm in sort of was not being very lucrative back here in Idaho. I got burned on some jobs. Didn't get paid, and then had a lot of legal fees tied up with it, too. So
she was too proud and too scared to go bankrupt.
A friend of mine knew that I had all my endorsements and said, you know, they'd been out there for a while and said to come out and drive with their company.
Her plan was to spend 5 to 10 years out there, make as much money as she could, pay off her debts, and then hopefully have enough left over to retire.
And I figured I could take care of a lot of debt and a lot of things pretty quickly and be done with it, and then, you know, come back to my home.
She spent most of her 20s in Stanley, Idaho, actually, where she lived with friends and worked a lot of odd jobs in mines, driving snow plows.
My whole life has been about that, not just with work, but the sports I did, the lifestyle I carried.
And she told me that she always preferred the work that others said she couldn't do, so a lot of physical labor.
I don't know any other way. If I try to act like a girl and get dressed up and be that kind of person, that's like, that's totally not me. At the time, we were taking home about $10,000 a month.
From what I've heard, that's about average for a driver. Some drivers make less, some make more. It all really depends on overtime, and most drivers out there work a lot of overtime, and Sandy certainly did.
So that was really great.
But it's all pretty good wages right now for working in the middle of a recession.
And I very rarely saw other women drivers. Occasionally you see one pass by and it was like, oh, there goes one. And pretty much I just pretended like I wasn't one. I didn't, you know, kind of kept to myself.
For women in particular, I think the simple fact that there are many fewer of them out there than men, just because of who that work kind of work attracts, that gender disparity has created a culture that's been uncomfortable and even threatening to a lot of women.
A lot of it was more prejudice against women, like thinking they couldn't do the job or you didn't know what you were doing.
Many police departments in the region have reported much higher rates of domestic and sexual assault since the boom began.
Most of the oil, you know, places where you pick up, it's like you are in the middle of nowhere and there's no one around. So if something happened, you know.
I mean, most of the dangers in the oil fields, no gender difference, of course. So just driving an oil truck is really dangerous. And these drivers are often working really long hours, either out of choice or necessity, and often driving in terrible conditions out in the middle of snowstorms or over black ice in the wintertime.
Well, it was going really great until
she got into an accident last June.
I got in a car wreck. Stopped on the highway to turn left, and apparently a guy fell asleep at the wheel and put me going 70.
And over the past year since then, since we've been speaking, she's been trying to figure out a way to pick up the pieces.
Pretty much really lucky to be alive, because right while I was stopped, I was waiting for a couple semis to go by. So had it been a split second sooner, I'm sure I would have been, you know, not here. I've gone back to my old occupation, working part-time for whoever wants some tile work done, and so, but that's not exactly easy on my body either.
I think a lot of people saw the Bakken as their short-term fix to their financial woes.
My story wasn't really that much different than anyone else as far as, you know, out there for being there trying to make a better life and get rid of the hard times they've been going through.
You know, those jobs aren't going to last forever, so.
A lot of older professional people that had, you know, pretty successful careers throughout their lives, and then, you know, everything's gone kind of not so great the last several years.
It's a window of time that, you know, people are really trying to jump into and trying to, you know, figure out what they can get out of it.
And thanks to Nelson Harvey for that report. The Denver Post reports that U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the Bureau of Land Management are at odds over how to manage about 100 square miles in Utah and Colorado. According to the Post, Fish and Wildlife is seeking to declare the land critical habitat for a pair of desert wildflowers, while the BLM has already authorized those lands for oil shale development. Should the land be declared critical habitat for the two plants, known as Graham's Beard Tongue and White River Beard Tongue, the BLM would have to consult with biologists before issuing oil shale permits. The Fish and Wildlife Service claims the plants are already suffering because of oil and gas development, as well as grazing, invasive weeds, and the effects of climate change. The proposed critical habitat covers land from an edge of Duchesne County in Utah to a portion of Rio Blanco County in Colorado, a 106-square-mile area that already includes 5 designated habitat zones. As supporters for an increase in state funding for public schools continue their efforts to get the measure known as Initiative 22 on the November ballot, the Denver Post reports that thousands of children across Colorado could be turned away from preschool this year, since the state won't be able to afford their education. The state's Department of Ed doesn't keep exact figures on how many 3- to 4-year-olds don't receive preschool education because of funding shortages. But according to the Post, the agency estimates that nearly 12,000 at-risk children had no access to preschool through the state or the federal Head Start program for the 2011-2012 school year. That's around 70% of the 70,000 4-year-olds in Colorado. A 2013 legislative report says that at-risk children who attend preschool wind up performing better in math, reading, and writing. Oil and gas leaders are gathering in Denver this week to discuss innovation and controversy in their industry. Benta Berkland takes a look at how the state's water wars can shape the public debate over fracking.
Denver Water says the oil and gas industry can learn from their model of trying to engage citizens and listen to critics. CEO Jim Lockhead says he thinks his organization has successfully come back from the days of being viewed as the evil empire.
Realizing that the old way wasn't acceptable, we needed to be flexible, we need to be a lot more nimble and adaptable.
Lockhead says it starts with personal relationships.
Literally sitting down with opponents in their kitchens, at coffee shops.
Colorado Department of Natural Resources head Mike King also urged the energy industry to use a lighter touch.
Not with the sense of we're here because we're doing great things for America. We understand that. We understand that we bring jobs, that we bring energy diversity. That doesn't mean much when a drilling rig's going up in your backyard. If you're a parent with children, you're worried about the truck traffic. The fact that we have energy independence is great, but how are you going to protect my kids?
The debate over fracking is poised to heat up even more over the next few months, when citizens in many communities along the Front Range are likely to vote on fracking moratoriums. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
The Grand Junction Daily Sentinel reports that as part of a lawsuit settlement, the BLM will reevaluate concerns over air pollution from 1,300 oil and gas wells in Garfield County and surrounding areas. The environmental group Earth Justice brought the suit in 2011 on behalf of the Carbondale-based Wilderness Workshop and the Wilderness Society, among others. The group said, for now, no new drilling permits for the 34 projects involved will be allowed until after the reevaluation. They also said the BLM will now establish an online tracking system for federal drilling permits in the agency's Colorado River Valley field office. Earth Justice claims the BLM improperly used a 2006 environmental impact statement for proposed wells on the Rhone Plateau to approve other projects in Garfield County. BLM spokesperson David Boyd said Monday that despite the settlement, the agency still agrees with that claim, saying it wasn't improper to apply the Rhone Plateau data to drilling projects in other areas because the assessment looked at the full airshed of the region. Boyd also said some of the 1,300 wells have already been drilled and aren't affected by the settlement. And finally, the Daily Sentinel reports that Garfield County commissioners have decided to support Colorado sheriffs who are legally challenging new gun restrictions in the state, joining a growing list of counties to do so. Acting at the behest of Garfield Sheriff Lou Valerio, the commissioners on Monday unanimously approved a resolution opposing vague and unenforceable gun laws adopted by the state legislature. "We own pistols, we own shotguns, we own rifles, and we're proud that we do," Commissioner Mike Sampson said, referring to himself and fellow commissioners John Martin and Tom Jankowski. 8 Colorado counties have passed measures in support of the Second Amendment right to bear arms, including Mesa, Montrose, Moffat, Delta, and Montezuma counties in western Colorado, according to ColoradoGunCase.org. That's a website devoted to the lawsuit by 55 Colorado sheriffs and others to take on House Bills 1224 and 1229, which limit gun magazines to 15 rounds and impose universal background checks on gun sales and transfers. And that's it for the news today. I'm Marty Derlin. Thanks for listening.